An economist who sits on the National Economic Council in Prague has shaken the study of economics as few ever have. Tomáš Sedláček brought back two terms into the economic discourse which are far from being scientific: good and evil. Why he is doing so will be the central point of our discussion. It's now 5 years ago that your book has been published. For those who still haven't read it, why should we divide economy into good and evil? Just in short terms, to resume it back.
Well, my point is not to divide the economy of bit for you know, to draw an exact line between good and evil. This we know is quite impossible. My point in that book was to say that the economy is not outside of good and evil, but it in fact predetermines good and evil, that economics is ideology, primarily an ideology, then a little bit of mathematics, and then maybe nothing else.
Yeah.
And that that perhaps one nice way to say that there is no invisible hand of the market that automatically transforms our selfish, non-considerate, autistic, self-consumed, profit-maximizing effort into general good, that there is no such thing that does ethics in our stead, that the role of the capitalism is to make us perhaps rich, but the capitalism cannot care for our parents, for our old. Capitalism yeah. cannot care for our weak. We have to do that. Yeah. So a nice way how to say this is that there is no such thing as an invisible hand of the market, that there is only your right hand and your left hand, and they can do good things and they can do bad things.
You were as a counselor in Davos, for example, and lots of other economic forums. What do you think, which kind of role do you play meanwhile there? Is it like, I mean, long time ago, it would like artists came up and they were like the for recreation, those who make amusement. But do they really take it serious and adapt your models that you develop for serious?
Well, you know, everything starts with talking. The microphone that you are holding in your hands was words
yeah.
some centuries ago. Democracy is nothing else but words, and the economic model is not model. I mean, the models there, I think, are only to be used as sort of ideological argumentation. The economy will run exactly in the same way, even without the models that we have. What the models do is they sort of screw our reading of reality, or they skew it. The economy will run in its course, but we are holding, so to speak, the ideological component of economics. So either you believe that we don't have to give any moral impulses to the society, that the god of economics, let's say, will self-cure all else, including the pension system and including, I don't know what, the poverty and equality, or we will believe that we actually have to actively take care of that ourselves, that we can't leave that to the autopilot. It's a little bit like democracy. Yeah. If you let go of the steering wheel of a society, it will not park itself in democracy. Democracy is the most beautiful system we have, but it's not natural. Yeah. If you look at the history of Europe, democracy is a very, very, very small occupant of time space. So everybody understands we need to nurture and take care of democracy, especially today when we have quite arrogant and wall-building politics appearing on the democratic scene. Why don't we believe the same way about capitalism? That capitalism also has to have a culture. Capitalism also has to be nurtured.
Yeah. So it's you're more or less like an impulse giver who says, people keep watching. This is really, it can be dangerous if you don't rethink it now.
Yeah. I mean, the autopilot isn't a reliable one. This is my point. But all of my other colleagues who, let's say, agree with the mainstream are doing exactly the same thing, only the argument is different. But you can see this. I mean, it's good that we talk about these things. 10 years ago, before the financial crisis, these topics were not even, they were not even out there. The topics of the Kultur Symposium wouldn't have been like this. So in this way, everything starts with questions.
Yeah.
And most of people think that the role of questions is to be answered. I think the role of questions is to be. We have to have questions. We shouldn't be, we should hesitate. We shouldn't be. People who have no questions have become the most dangerous people in history.
And it's perhaps also your interest in fighting against that we are always normatively implied, that we are always so much conditioned. And
there is nothing like ideologically neutral space. Ideological vacuum doesn't exist. You have to always exit from ideology, not into an ideological vacuum, but into a different ideology. And the situation today is a little bit like the situation of the church in the medieval times. Nobody believes the Catholic ideology anymore, but today we don't have Luther.
You're in the difficult position of being in two systems. You're in the middle of the capital system, working actively day for day, and you're also a theorist.
Yes.
To combine both, is that really possible, or is it always thinking, oh shit, I'm in the system, I can't really be so loud as I'd like to be?
I have always lived like that, on sort of edges, never really being fully one thing, always trying to be multiple things at the same time. Asking myself the question, of course, this is a question that I ask myself a lot, would I be more useful if I would be a monk living in a monastery in the middle of a desert and eating dry cockroaches and preaching to the world? No, I'm preaching to myself, to the situation, being part of the situation. We've had monks and priests saying similar things that I'm saying 100 years ago, but nobody took them seriously because they were not part of the system. So this is also a two-edged sword, but of course it makes it a little bit more difficult to be, let's say, attempting to be a philosopher detached from the system as a philosopher should be, but at the same time, many times being expected to come up with practical solutions.